Holding on Gimel Bay's the last line of the narrow lines. We learned in the Mishnah, we said a cheresh shoit of a cotton, or potter from re'ia. So we went through defining what a cheresh is exactly. Usually in Shas, a cheresh means somebody who can't hear and can't speak. But we said that in this particular case of Aliyah Lerego, we're also excluding somebody who only can't hear or who only can't speak. They are also potter from re'ia, even though they're chayev in most other mitzvahs in the Torah. So now let's go on to define the shoita. Tana Rabbanan, a zehu shoita. What is the definition of a shoita? And not just here, but throughout Shas, when we talk about that a shoita is potter from mitzvahs. So hayotzi yichidi balayla, when the person goes out alone at night, we have to remember in those times going out alone at night was dangerous. There could be shadim, there could be robbers, there weren't streetlights, so there could be holes in the ground that you might fall into, wild animals, etc. Now the Gemara is going to say soon, we're going to talk about, is it only that? Wait. V'halon b'veis hakvaros. The second one is where he sleeps overnight in a cemetery. Same thing. It's not exactly a safe thing to do. V'hamakareyas k'susay, and who rips his clothes. So now, what does that mean when we mention those three things? Itmar. So we have a machloek b'samaroyim on that. Rav Huna omar adshiyu kulon b'vasachas. It means Rav Huna says he's a shoita only if he does all these three things. If he just does one or two of them, then that's not enough to make him a shoita for reasons that the Gemara is going to say in a second. Rabbi Yechanan says, no, even if he just does one single one of these things, but he does it repeatedly, is enough to make him consider a shoita. So the Gemara says, hechidomi. Well, according to Rabbi Yechanan, what's the scenario? If we're talking about that he does them in an obviously crazy way, in other words, we're not just talking about a person who very calmly like gets up in the middle of the night and goes walking around the street. We're talking about that we can see he's doing it in a deranged way. Well, then I feel a b'chodanami. Then shouldn't one of them be enough, according to Rav Huna, that is, who says that you have to do all of them. So why would Rav Huna say that you have to do all three? And if he's not doing it in an obviously deranged way, after the kulunami loy, then just because he's doing all these three things, why does that brand him as a shoita? And the answer is, we are in fact talking about where he does them derech shtus, but if he does only one of them or only two of them, that's not enough to brand him as a shoita, even though he's doing it derech shtus, because there can be a reason for it. Because let's start with the one who sleeps overnight in the cemetery. If he's doing only that, even though he's doing it derech shtus in a deranged looking way, emu, you could say that maybe he's doing it kadesh tishra olav ruach tumah hodkavid. He may be doing it in order that a ruach tumah, that a spirit of tumah, should rest on him. In fact, it says one of the types of magic that's also in the Torah is dodo shalamesim, involves where a person does that. He goes hungry, he fasts for a while, he goes and stays overnight in the Beis HaKvaros, and he wants that the spirits of the dead should rest on him and speak to him. So it's actually also from the Torah. But the point is, at least, so okay, if he does that, then he's a Baal Averis, but he's not. But that doing that alone, even though he's doing it derech shtus, does not make him a shoita necessarily. And similarly, b'yotzi yichidi b'layla, if he goes out alone at night and he's doing only that, even though he's doing it many times, emu gandripas achdei. Rav Huna would say, you could still say that maybe he was seized by gandripas, which is, what's gandripas? So Rashi says two possibilities. One, he says his rebbeim explained that it means a sickness that's caused by worry, so like some kind of paranoia or something, which makes him therefore want to go and wander the streets. Rashi himself says that it means that he's overheated and he wants to go outside and get some fresh air. So just doing that, even though it's true that going out alone at night is dangerous, but if he's just doing that one thing, then we wouldn't say that it makes him a shoita. In fact, Tosfos says you wouldn't even say that according to Rabbuna now we're talking about, you wouldn't even say because he does one of those things repeatedly, we wouldn't even necessarily say that he's a shoter in that one. We might at most say that he's a shoter in that one particular thing. We wouldn't necessarily say that he's a shoter across the board. Anyway, Ram Karei asks Susay, if he's ripping his clothes and he's doing only that, Emor Bal Machshavesu, you could say, okay, he's having thoughts. It could mean, in other words, that he's deep in thought, and therefore in that he's tearing his clothes without realizing it. It could mean that he's having crazy thoughts, he's having paranoid thoughts or whatever, and therefore that's causing him to rip his clothes. But just that by itself wouldn't make him a shoter l'chol davar. But Kivin Davdinu Lakulu, but says Rav Huna, once he's doing all of them, Havalahu Kamisha Nogach Shur Hamur Vigomel, then it's the equivalent of, suppose you have an animal. Now, we actually learned about this just a couple of days ago in Shlosha Parakim of Rambam. Suppose that you have an animal. We know that if an animal gores other animals three times, then it becomes a mord. So what if each time it's goring the same animal, the same kind of animal, that doesn't necessarily make it a mord for all other animals. For whatever reason, that particular animal pushes its buttons and causes it to go wild. We wouldn't necessarily say that's mord for other kinds of animals. But if you have Kamisha Nogach Shur Hamur V'Gomel, suppose that an ox gores on one day an ox, and on another day a donkey, and on the third day a camel, we don't say it's moored for only those, V'Nasa Moored Lakol. We say at that point, three different minim means that he's moored for all of them. So therefore, by the same token, Rav Huna is going to say, once he does these three things, then that's enough to brand him, so each one of them in isolation, we could say, like we just said in the Gemara, there could be a different reason that he's doing it that doesn't rise to the level of shtus. But now that we see that he's doing all three of them, then we would say that already makes him a chazaka, that he's a shoita in everything. So the Gemara says, "Amar Papa, Ish Mi'aleil Rav Huna Hod Tanya." If Rav Huna had heard this that we learn in a Brisa, where it says, "Ezehu Shoyta Zeham Abed Kol Mashenoistim Loi," where the Brisa defines a Shoyta as someone who destroys everything that he's given, if he had known of that Brisa, have a Hoderbe, then he would have changed his mind. Because we see in this Brisa that Hama Abed Kol Mashenoistim Loi is the definition of Shoyta. But the question is, what does that mean? What would Rav Huna have changed his mind on exactly? Ki have a hoderbe mi kareak suse or who to have a hoderbe? Do we mean that he would have only changed his mind regarding the ripping his clothes? In other words, he would have said that the three things that we said before, going out alone at night, sleeping overnight in the Beis HaKvaris, and ripping his clothes. Do we say that Rav Huna would have changed his mind and said that makareyak susay by itself is enough, and therefore we would say so would we say that makareyak susay is another form of that ma'abed komash noistim loy is substitutes for makareyak susay? Would we say he would have changed his mind on that and say that losing or destroying everything that he's given is the third symptom of a shoyta? So you'd still need the other two as well, but now instead of specifically makareyak susay, it would be more generally ma'amin mashinosin, right? Or maybe he would have changed his mind and said that you don't even need all of them, all you need is ma'amin mashinosin, right? And that all by itself would be enough to brand him as a shoyta. Because of this last verse. So the Gemara says, Teku, we can't be sure what we mean, what exactly Rav Huna would have changed his mind on. Now, the question becomes, do we mean these things that it's mentioning in the Gemara over here, do we mean that it has to be davka these things or other kinds of things as well? What if a person is not doing any of these things, but he's doing other obviously crazy things? The Rambam holds that the various things that we're mentioning in our Gemara over here are not exhaustive. Now, for example, if he's only ma'abed kol mashenoisim loy, then yeah, we're saying that's enough to brand him as a shoyta. The halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan, that even one thing, if he's doing it repeatedly, is enough to brand him as a shoyta. However, it doesn't dafka have to be the one thing ma'abed tomashin noisin loy, says the Rambam, if he does other kinds of crazy things as well, where you can see that he's obviously mentally disturbed, then he would be considered a shoyter, and then we're saying he's potter mikol mitzvah samuris batora, and it would mean also, for example, as far as, for example, he can't give a get to his wife because he has to be of sound mind in order to do that. He can't buy or say anything that he buys or sells when he's in such a condition is not considered a valid purchase or a valid sale because he's obviously not there mentally. That's according to the Rambam. On the other hand, you have the Rishonim who disagree with that. The Maharik brings in a tshuva that sometime the Maharik was an important late Rishon or early Achron in the 1400s. He wrote Shailos Atshuvas that are very highly used by the Poskim. So he describes how sometime before him there had been a case in the city of Würzburg in Germany where a person had given a get and there was question about whether he's mentally fit. And one of the Rishonim of that time, Rabbi Avigdor Cohen, sent a letter to the Maharam, probably Maharam Rutenberg, discussing whether in fact it was kosher or not, because he said since the person didn't exhibit the symptoms that we're saying over here in the Gemara, he didn't go out alone at night, he didn't stay overnight in the Beis HaKvaris, he didn't destroy everything that was given to him, etc., but he did other crazy things. Nevertheless, the Rabbi Avigdor Cohen says that he's not a shoyter, unlike the Rambam's definition that because he does other things that show that he's crazy, then therefore we'd say he's crazy. So you have a machlokas rishonim on that question of what exactly it has to be that a person is doing that would brand him as a shoyter. So you actually have an interesting case that happened about 250 years ago or so that was called the Get of Cliver. Cliver or Clivus, whatever, is a city in northern Germany. There was a Yid over there who had been Makadish, a woman, and then after that he started showing signs of some kind of mental issues. He was very paranoid. He's afraid that people are out to kill him. He has to run away to England, b'chola b'chola. So of course his father-in-law was not very happy about it, and they arranged a get. Now, or he himself, the father-in-law was not happy about it. The son-in-law himself arranged a get. The father-in-law was concerned it might not be a valid get. If the son-in-law is crazy, if he's a shoyter, like we're defining over here in the Gemara, then the get's no good, and his daughter is still an aguna. So, Akitzur, what wound up happening was that Abonim of Frankfurt took the view that the get is possible. They said they have different other pieces of evidence, different pieces of eidos and whatever that show that the guy really is an out and out shoyter, and the get therefore is possible. Most of the other rabbonim of that time throughout Europe held that the get is kosher. It became a huge machloikus, which is called the machloikus of the get of cliver. The upshot was not long after that. So in the end, as I said, there was a whole machlokas over it for several years. Eventually, apparently, the guy got over his mental illness or whatever it was. There was actually an interesting postscript to it. Eventually, he wanted to remarry her. But the question was, does he need to remarry her, or was he married the whole time? After all, according to the Rabbanim of Frankfurt, it was a possible get to begin with. So he was actually, it says, brought that he was Mekadesh with the words, Hare at Uid Mekudeshesli. You're still Mekudesh to me. And this way he's covering all his bases. Interesting historical sidelight of it, by the way, is during this, while this Machlokas was going on, the Rav of Frankfurt, of Abishol, passed away. One of the Dayanim of Frankfurt, named Rav Nosson Maz, who's actually a distant relative of mine, took over as interim Rav for a couple of years, but they were looking, so now they're looking for a new Rav. The rule was that everybody liked Rav Nosson a lot, but the rule was you can't have a person from the town itself be the Rav. You're afraid he might be biased towards some of the people or whatever. So they're looking around Europe for a new Rav. They decided at some point, the Parnassim decided though, they don't want to have any Rav who held that this get is kosher, because since their former Rav, Rav Abishol, had said that it's possible, so therefore, out of respect for him, they didn't want any Rav who said differently. So that disqualified most of the Rabbanim of that time. What happened? The Baal HaFla, Rav Pinchas, at that time, was the Rav of some town in Eastern Europe. He was going to also write a tshuva saying that the get is kosher, like many of the other rabbanim of that time had done. But when he was writing the tshuva, his inkwell spilled and ruined what he was writing. He decided that it was min hashamayim, and therefore he shouldn't write the tshuva. So the upshot was he was one of the few rabbanim of that time who had not written a tshuva, pro or con the thing, and therefore the parnassim of Frankfurt were willing to accept it, were able to accept him as rav without going against that condition of theirs, and he ended up becoming the rav of Frankfurt and serving there for 30 odd years. Anyway, that was all a story where, again, you have in that case, you look at it, this person didn't have the classic symptoms that we're mentioning here in the Gemara. He wasn't ripping his clothes. He wasn't going out alone at night, et cetera, et cetera. But he was doing something else that was evidently crazy. And then saying that there are people out to get him and he's fearing for his life or whatever with no reason nowadays. And they'd probably diagnose him that he has paranoia or something, and they'd give him some medication. But back then they didn't have any of that. But that was the machloikas came down to that. Do we say that the simonim over here in the Gemara, you have to have those simonim and only those that make him a shoita? Or is it maybe that there are other things, like the Rambam says as well, that could make him a shoita? Okay. In any case, so that's basically the definition of a shoita for our purposes. Next, the Mishnah had said the next ones who are potter from aliyah l'regel and from bringing the korbanos are the tumtum v'andrigin eskula. So a tumtum is somebody who his genitals are covered over, so you can't tell clearly. You can't tell clearly whether it's a male or a female. And andrigonus is one who has the genitals of both, a male and a female. So we're saying that they're potter. So why? Tanan Abana, we learn in a Braisa. When the Pasuk says Zechur, now the Pasuk says Yeror called Zechurcha. All your males should appear in the Bais Mikdash three times a year, Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkos. So if it only said the word Zechur, that would mean Lahoitzias Anoshim. That alone would be excluding women, because Zechur obviously means males. When it says Zechurcha, when it says your males, so it means that the further miut, Lahoitzi Tumtum Vandraganus. So therefore, it comes to exclude a tumtum and an androgynous as well. And when it says kol zechurcha, when it says all of your children, all of your males, l'rabbis zaktanim, that's a ribui, and it comes to tell you to include children, that children above a certain age, as we mentioned in the Mishnah, are chayev in ri'ah. So now let's analyze that. Omar mar zechur l'hoitzias anoshim, we're saying that Yeroa calls Zechurcha, just the word Zechur by itself, without even the Cha, is already enough to exclude women. The question is, Ha Lama Likra? Why do we even need a Pasuk for it? Mechti Mitzvas Esesh Azman Gromahu. After all, Re'ia and the Korbanos that go along with it are a Mitzvas Esesh Azman Gromah. And we know the general rule, Ha Mitzvas Esesh Azman Gromah Noshim Pturis. And as we know, women are generally potter from such mitzvahs. So automatically they'd be potter. The answer is itzrich. Nevertheless, we still need the word zechur to be motzi then, because otherwise, sakadadach amina neilach re'iyah mehakil. Otherwise, you would think to learn a gzeira shava on the word re'iyah from hakil, as we talked about yesterday, that there exists a gzeira shava that compares the mitzvah of re'iyah ba'azara and the mitzvah of the korbanos together with it to the mitzvah of hakil. And malahala noshim chayavus. And when it comes to hakel, we know women are chayav because it says so explicitly in the pasuk hanoshim v'hanoshim v'hataf. So therefore, so based on that zera shava, you would think afkan noshim chayavus. You would think that maybe women are chayav in re'iyah as well. Kamash malan. Therefore, we need the word zechur to tell us otherwise. Then the brai said, continuing omamar zechurcha lahoitzi tumtum v'andereganus. That the word zechur cha, the langachah, teaches us to take out a tumtum and an androgynous. They're also potter from re'iyah. So the question is, why do we need? So the question is, the shlema androgynous itzir. I understand why we need to exclude the androgynous, because sakadat hamina hoyo ve'islay tzad zachus. Because after all, the androgynous does have male genitals, so therefore you would think l'chayev. You would think that therefore he should be chayev on the grounds of that, kamash malon, and therefore the pasuk is telling us he's potter because he's not exclusively a male. Kamash malon deberia b'fnei atzmehu. He's really considered a separate kind of creature. He's considered almost like a third gender, neither male nor female, and therefore the word zechurcha therefore takes him out. Ela tumtum, but the question is on the tumtum, what spekahu, A tumtum is a suffix. After all, a tumtum, when once, if you were to cut open the covering over there, it could be a male or it could be a female. Well, mi itzrich kralam uti speka. Do we actually need a pasuk to be memayet a suffix? Namely, now there's a few ways of looking at. So why not? I mean, after all, so Rashi explains the question is, given that it's a suffix, why would we think that he should be chayiv? Now, an interesting point in that is, what do you mean, why should he be chayiv? Suffolk daraisa v'chumra. There's an interesting point that some rishonim say that the whole concept that we say, sfeika daraisa v'chumra, is itself drabanan. On a daraisa level, they say, I think the Rambam says this, the Meiri brings this, others, that on a daraisa level, the whole concept that sfeika daraisa v'chumra is only drabanan. On a daraisa level, we would actually say that we're makel. So all Gemara would be an example of that. Given that a tumtum is a suffolk, on a pure daraisa level, he's already potter. So therefore, there'd be no reason to. To have a pasuk to be memayat him. Where anyway, the suffix would be enough to be memayat him. Tosfos learns differently. Tosfos has a long discussion over here about the ins and outs of suffix. Marsha explains that Tosfos may have had a girsa over here, not. We have in the Gemara over here, me itzurich kralam or utisveka. Do we need a posik to be might the suffix? And according to Tosfos, they may have had the gusa without the word me, which means itzurich kralam or utisveka, which means we need the posik to tell us about a case where there's a suffix. So therefore, so we don't have it available to teach us about a tumtum as well. Or we would say only the tumtum, not the androgynous. Tosfos also brings up a point. In some places, the Gemara discusses when we say that there's a pasuk that's telling us about a suffix, and the Gemara will say that no, because kame shmaya galya, because we may have a suffix, but Hashem Himself has no suffix about the status of this thing, and therefore you shouldn't need a pasuk for it. However, the Tosfos Arosh explains that there's different kinds of suffix. There's a suffix where we physically don't know what the thing is, as in this case over here where the tumtum, he might be a male, we might be a female. We don't know until we actually cut open that covering. And then there's a different kind of suffix where we know what the facts are. The question is, what halachic status does it have? So over here, the Gemara is not saying that we don't need a pasuk for a suffix because kame shmaya galya, because that's not the kind of suffix we're dealing with over here. We're saying that we ourselves could find out that suffix once it's cut open, but until then, we ourselves don't know whether it's a male or a female. The question is, in other words, about the actual facts on the ground rather than on the question of what halachic status he has. Anyway, so the question is, so why do we need a pasuk to be memayat a suffix like that? Amar Abaya, kishabetzav mivachutz. So Abaya says the case we're talking about could be where you can see his beitzim, you can see his testicles sticking out on the outside. In other words, you have this covering for the tumtum. It's covering the actual erva itself, but we see there's something sticking out underneath it, and we can see and we can feel that those are beitzim. So we know obviously that's a male. We know that someplace under that covering there is a gid, there is a male organ, it's just covered. Nevertheless, we're still saying that he's still considered a tumtum. So even though it's not really a suffix anymore, we know for a fact that it's a zachar, but because it's covered over, therefore he still has the din of a tumtum, and therefore we're still saying he's potter from Re'iyah. Tosfos points out, by the way, now, why don't we say that, okay, he's a suffix, so what? Let him bring his korbanos, and he can bring them out tonight. If he's a zocher, then he's required to bring them, and if he's a woman, then he would bring them in a dover, like we talked about at the beginning of the Masechta, about a cotton doing that. And the answer is, Tosfos says that the problem then would come in as far as smicha. A man does smicha on his korbanos, according to most tanoim, a woman does not. So now we would have that, and the problem is, you can't do smicha where you're not required to, because that would be avoid of a kodshim. That's you're doing unnecessary work with kodshim. So you're taking away smicha for no good reason, and you can't do that. So therefore, you can't say that you should bring it as a possible choyva, possible nadava. The child that we were talking about the other day, fine, he's a child, he doesn't have to do smicha anyway, so he can bring korbanos during Yom Tov, during Chol Hamoed rather, if he wants, and not do smicha on them. And similarly, a woman could bring voluntary korbanos, she doesn't do smicha on them anyway, but here where it's a suffix, man or woman, then we can't do that. Okay. We said Omar Mar Kol Zechurcha L'Rabbis Zaktanim. We said the Kol Zechurcha includes children. So the question is, what do you mean? Ratan Ratnan Chutz Mecheres Shoyt V'Katan. Didn't we say in our Mishnah that Cheres Shoyt V'Katan are all potter? I'm gonna buy it like Kasha. Can the cotton she gear lachinuch? Can the cotton shalai he gear lachinuch? The difference is the child of the age of chinuch already? For each different mitzvah, you have a different age of chinuch. In our Mishnah, we actually had a machlokes with Shammai v'Hillel at what point is of the age of chinuch for it. So once he reaches that point, then we're saying the pasuk is telling us that he's chayav. Before that point, then he's potter. The problem with that is cotton she gear lachinuch d'rabbanon he. The whole concept that a cotton is chayev in mitzvahs after the age of chinuch, that itself is only drabbanan. Daraisa, a child is not chayev in mitzvahs until they become bar bas mitzvah, or technically until they develop shtei sairis. So how can you say that there's a pasuk telling us that a cotton of a certain age is chayev? So you're right. The Gemara says enochanami. You're right. Ukra asmachta ba'alma. As a matter of fact, the pasuk is only an asmachta. And we're not actually learning from the words kol zechurcha that a child is chayev. We have the pasuk over there, as we've learned before, something that the Ritva says, and asmachta means that Hashem left that Hashem put those words in the pasuk as a hint to the chachamim. Should they decide to make such a takana, then they have a source, they have a support for it in the pasuk. And so here it is a takana d'rabbanan that children below the age of chinuch are chayev. I mean, above the age of chinuch, achayev, we're not actually learning it from the word kol zechurcha. We're just using that as an asmachta. Well, then the question becomes, well, what is the word kol coming to tell us then? If it's not actually, what's the actual drasha that we're learning from the word kol? The answer is l'chida achayrim. It comes to teach us what achayrim say, which usually achayrim means Reb Meir. The Tnan, or the Tanya, really, it's a braisa. Achayrim oimrim, hamakamitz. A person who gathers together dog excrement, so he collects it with his hands, so therefore he's smelly and filthy. Rashi explains over here and in other places in Shas that they would use them for. So here Rashi explains that they would use them for tanning leather. They would use it for tanning high quality leather. They would soak it for a while in dog excrement. In a different Gemara in Ksubas, Rashi starts saying, I don't know really what they use it for. However, Rashi says over there, I've seen places where when they're laundering clothes, they soak it in that for a day or two. The idea is basically, I mean, it's pretty disgusting stuff, but it's got various enzymes and whatnot in it that would help break down things. So therefore, in that sense, it's useful for tanning leather to break down some of the chemical compounds in there. And also for the same reason, for washing clothes, because it would help break down some types of tough stains. Anyway, so you have if they're using dog excrement for that kind of purpose, somebody needs to collect it. The job of collecting it is called mekametz. So such a person, v'hametzaref nechoshes, also a person who refines copper at the mine. So in other words, they mine copper and then right there they refine it, which is also it's a very bad smelling kind of thing. So a person like that, his body and his clothes are soaked through with the smell of it. Bursi and a tanner who tans leather, so they also tannery smells really bad. So Acherim say that such people, Pturin min Ra'iyah, are potter from Ra'iyah. Mishum Shenema kol zechurcha, because the pasuk says all your zechur. So now this is what we're learning from the word zechur. Misha yochal lalas in kol zechurcha. So it means who's chayev and re'ia, only somebody who could go up together with all the other males. Yotzu ela she'en and re'in lalas in kol zechurcha, as opposed to these people, they smell so bad, so nobody would want to join with them. So therefore, they would not be going on aliyah l'regel together with everybody else, because everybody would give them a wide berth, and therefore, Acherim say, that's what we learn from the word kol zechurcha, that such people are potter. An interesting point that Mephoshim say is it's not even so much for themselves, it's more the fact because other people are going to be staying away from them, it's going to make them feel bad, and therefore, it's going to make them feel bad, and it's going to destroy their simcha of yomtev, and therefore, the Torah potters them from aliyah l'regel. Now, an interesting point is the Rambam paskins that such people are not potter. They have to clean themselves up. They have to take a bath and then do whatever it takes to remove the smell and go on aliyah l'regel. So how does that fit with the Or Gemara over here? So the Kesef Mishnah explains, okay, you know, we're saying over here, Acherim say that. doesn't mean that evidently the other Chachamim disagree with them. Now, the Gemara is not saying what those Chachamim would say. We learn from the word kol, but nevertheless, apparently the other Chachamim who disagree with Achayrim have something else that they learn from the word kol. And therefore, so the Rambam is passing like the Chachamim against Achayrim. And he brings from the Mahari Krukus, who says a different point. He says that maybe even Achayrim are saying only as long as these people are filthy and smelly are they potter from Aliyah L'Regel. But if they clean themselves up, then sure, they'd be able to go together with everybody else. So therefore, the Rambam is saying they have an obligation to do that. They have to try to get themselves into a state where they're able to go with everybody else, and then they have to go. We said in the Mishnah, Noshim ba'avodim she'enim meshachrorim fuller. We said women and slaves who are not freed, meaning avodim knanim, are potter from aliyah l'regel. So the Gemara says, b'shleim and noshim kedam moron. Women, we understand why they're potter. We just said, because the word zechur. Ela avodim menolon. How do we know that avodim knanim are potter? Amar Rav Huna, omakra, because the Pasuk says, el p'nei ha'oden Hashem. That you have to do aliyah l'regel to the presence of the master Hashem. Which therefore means, Misha en lo'ela oden echad, so the mitzvah of aliyah l'regel applies only to somebody who has only one master, Hashem. Yotzezeshi, yeshle oden achar, as opposed to an Eved Kanani, has a different master, because he has a human master, who in turn Hashem is his master, so therefore the Eved Kanani is potter. So the Gemara says, holam alikra, what do you need a posif to tell us that the Eved is potter? Mechti kol mitzvah shal isha chayeves ba eved chayeva. The general rule we know is that any mitzvah that women are chayev in, an eved knani is chayev in. Kol mitzvah she'ena isha chayeves ba ena eved chayeva. And vice versa, any mitzvah that women are potter from, avodim are generally potter from them as well. Degama loh me'isha. And we know that by a gzeira shava on the word loh, in connection with an eved and with a woman, by an eved, or rather, so by a shifcha, actually, by a shifcha knanis, it says the word oy chufsha loy nitan loh. By a woman, it says v'chasav loh sefer krisos. So we have a gzeira shava. Now, we don't need a comparison of a shifcha knanis to a woman, because a shifcha knanis is obviously a woman, and therefore, of course, the same dinim that apply to women are going to apply to her. So therefore, we use it. It's almost like one of those things, im eina inyan lazeh, tnei u inyan lazeh, since we don't need it in connection with a shivcha knanis, then instead we apply it to the eved knani, and we say the rule is that whatever mitzvah that a woman is potter from, where it says on the woman the word loh, then the eved knani is also potter from. So therefore, automatically we would know that the eved knani is potter from re'iyah, since women are potter. Now, the obvious question is, then what was the Gemara even asking to begin with? That the Gemara was asking Menolon. So what do you mean Menolon? The Gemara should have right away said, we know, because they're potter from whatever mitzvahs women are potter from. So the Ramban says, the Menolon is not from the stomach of the Gemara. This is not the Chachmei HaGemara asking where we know it from. This Menolon was actually part of Rav Huna's statement. Very often we find that Amirayim will begin their statements, sometimes even Tanoim, with a question, like a rhetorical question, and then immediately proceed to answer it. So that would be how it is with Rav Huna over here. He says, Menolon omakra al pnei odin Hashem. So now we're wondering, why does Rav Huna need to give us a limud when we know the general rule that avodim apotah from whatever mitzvahs we're not apotah from? The answer is, Amar Ravina, lo nitzrucha elo misha chetzi eved v'chetzi ben chorim. Truth. But a regular eved, we would know based on the fact that he's compared to a woman. But here we're talking about an eved who's half free and half slave. Whereas we learned on Beis Amud Aleph, we wouldn't know otherwise. After all, half of him is free. So maybe he should be chayev in aliyah l'regel. So we need to be told that he is potter. Now we talked about on Beis Amud Aleph a machloikus between the Rambam and most other Rishonim, which, now we learned over there that you have Mishnah Rishonah and Mishnah Achronah. There was the original din that a Chetzi Eved B'Chetzi Ben Chorin could stay like that indefinitely, and he's going to work on alternate days for himself and for his master. And then we had Beis Shammai argued, what are you going to do as far as he can't get married, because he can't marry a Shivcha and he can't marry a Bas Chorin, as we discussed at some length over there. So therefore, Beis Shammai says you have to force his master to free him, and the Eved will owe him the remaining value. And Beis Hillel ended up agreeing with that. So Rashi and most other Rishonim hold that the Chetzi Eved B'Chetzi Ben Chorin is in fact Chayev, so not like Ravina then. Because once he's going to be freed fairly soon, So therefore, so already now, even before he's freed, we would say that already he's chayav. So when the Mishnah had said, so in other words, we said at the beginning that according to Rashi, when it says akol chayav and mir'iyah, and we said at the very beginning of the Gemara that it comes to include chetzi eved v'chetzi ben chorin. So Rashi and the Raivad and other Rishonim hold that that is according to Mishnah Achrona, that's according to the final decision where Beis Hillel ended up agreeing with Beis Shammai. Then we say that such a person, even before the other half of him is free, is already chayav on aliyah l'regel, because very soon he's going to be completely freed, and therefore he only has one other. Whereas when the Mishnah had said avodim she'enem shachorim, and we're implying that they're potter, means that that would be according to Mishnah Rishonah. The Rambam, we said, learns it the other way around. The Rambam says that according to the Mishnah Rishonah, he would have been chayev because he could stay that way indefinitely, whereas according to Mishnah Achronah, he's potter until they actually accomplish freeing him. And we talk about there that the number of the Noisa Kalim on the Rambam deal with how the Rambam understands that in the light of our Gemara over here. Anyway, so the Gemara continues, Dekanami, you can see, in fact, from the wording of the Mishnah, that it's talking about, like Ravina says, a chetzi eved b'chetzi ben chorin. Dekatoni noshim va'avodim she'enim neshachorin. After all, the Mishnah's phrasing is women and slaves who are not freed. So, my she'enim neshachorin, so what the phrase she'enim neshachorin, ilema she'enim neshachorin klal, do we mean that they haven't been freed at all? Then it doesn't need to say that. Listen, avodim stomach, could just say avodim plain, and automatically avodim plain means avodim knanim, and we would know it means they're potter. So evidently, it must mean that it means they're not completely freed. And that would therefore point us to the case of chetzi eved v'chetzi ben chorin. And the Mishnah would be saying that they're potter. Again, according to Rashi and the Raivad, the Mishnah Rishona would be that they're potter, and the Mishnah Achrona would be that they're chayev. According to the Rambam, the other way around. Shmamina. So therefore, that proves that when the Mishnah says the words avodim she'en mishachorin, it's referring to a chetzi eved v'chetzi ben chorin. Next, we said in the Mishnah v'achigur v'asuma v'choyla v'azokin, we said a person who's lame or blind or sick or old, and we learned previously actually that we had opinions that say even if he's only blind in one eye and even if he's only lame in one leg, we're gonna mention that soon again. So tonan abanim, we learned in a brisa when it says regolim, when it says sholish regolim, means as we learned before prat lebalei kavin, it comes to exclude people who have artificial legs or artificial feet. Such people are potter from aliyah l'regel because they don't have their actual feet. Dover acher. Another explanation, regolim prat l'chigur or l'choyla or l'suma or l'zaken. Another explanation is that regolim comes to exclude a person who's lame or sick, meaning too sick to be able to walk, or l'suma or a blind person or l'zaken or an old person, l'sha'en yochel lalas b'naglav, and anybody else who can't go up on foot. Now Rashi explains, why do we have to say dover acher on that second one? And the reason is, Rashi says, because previously on Daf Gimel, we said that actually, when we started saying that we're excluding Balei Kavin, people with artificial legs, that we're excluding them based on the word regolim, not really. The Gemara explained previously on Daf Gimel that those were actually excluding from the chiyuv of aliyah l'regel based on the word pa'omim, because we discussed over there that the word pa'omim also means feet. So now the Dover Acher is saying that we're not really learning Balei Kavin from Regolim, we're learning it from Pa'omim, and therefore Regolim comes to teach us people who need some other kind of support beside their feet. So not where they have two feet, but their feet are not completely functioning, and they need something else. So a Chigir, somebody who one or another leg is not working and he needs a cane to walk on. A choila who's too sick to be able to walk on his feet, a suma who needs a cane, a blind person needs a cane in order to be able to walk, and a zokin, an old person, same thing, needs a cane in order to walk. And then it would also mean anybody else who can't go up on foot. Tosfos, we said there on Daf Gimel, learned a little differently and said that what it means is that the limud from regolim was really only an asmachta. Anyway, so the question is, v'sho'enu yochel lalas b'raglav la'asui mai. Who else are we including by saying somebody who can't go up on foot? We seem to have covered all the various possibilities of people who can't walk. Omar Rava, so Rava says, La'asuyim mefangi. It comes to include people who are delicate, people who they can't walk any place barefoot. Now, you're not allowed to go into the Harabais wearing leather shoes, as we're going to learn now in the Gemara. So therefore, so if you have a person who will, who can't or won't go anywhere without leather shoes, then that's another kind of person that she'eni yochel lalas beraglav, and therefore he would be potter from aliyah leregel. Dichtiv, as the pasuk says, ki savoyu leirois ponai. The Navi says to the Jewish people, when you come to see or to be seen in my presence, mi bikish zois miyadchem, who asked you for such a thing, remois chatzeroi, to trample on my courtyards. So in other words, to walk in the courtyards in the Harabayas with leather shoes would be like to trample it, and you're not allowed to do that. So therefore, we're saying that such people are not our potter from aliyah leregel, because unless they can learn to walk without leather shoes, then they can't go there. Tosfos points out that actually there's a different pasuk that we learn that you have to not wear leather shoes in the Hanabayas. We learn that by the burning bush, by the snare, Moshe was told to take off his shoes because the place that you're standing is Admas Kodesh, is holy ground. And we learn from that that the same all the more so the Bais Mikdash, which is holy forever. So Tosfos says, fine, but the Gemara over here is not really getting into the source of the din that you're not allowed to wear leather shoes in the Bais Mikdash. Rather, the Gemara wants to bring a pasuk that involves the word re'iyah. The subject over here, after all, is a mitzvah of re'iyah. So therefore, the word kisavoyu le'ra'is panai is very appropriate for that, and therefore the Gemara brings it. Now, by the way, the din of shoes on the Harabayas is similar to the din of shoes during Avelos and Tisha B'Av and whatever, and Yom Kippur, where it's only leather shoes that are also. So when the Bais Mikdash is rebuilt, Shibanim Heir of Yamenu, then B'Pashtos, a person will be allowed to wear shoes of other material over there, just not leather. Okay. The Gemara says, Tana, we learn in a Braisa, Ha'oro v'ha'tomei p'turin min re'iyah. Here are some more people who are potter from re'iyah, but that were not mentioned in the Mishnah. Also an oral, a person who does not have a bris milah. And here you have, here and in other places in Shas, you have a machloikas, Rashi, and Tosfos, what we mean by that. Now, obviously, we know what an oral is, but in other words, why is he an oral? So Rashi explains, now, in other words, you can have, why doesn't a person have a bris milah? You can have a few possible reasons. It could be because he refuses it, he doesn't believe in the mitzvah. That would be called mumur la'arevus. Needless to say that such a person is considered an oral. Then you have a person who is not getting a bris milah, not because he doesn't believe in the mitzvah, but because he's afraid of the pain. And then you can have a person who is not getting a bris milah because he can't, because it's he's medically not able to, because he has brothers who had a bris milah and died from the blood loss. And the din is therefore that he can't have a milah until we know that he's going to be able to survive it. So now, Rashi holds that all three of those, even the last one, is considered an oral for purposes that we're talking about here and in other places in Halakha. On the other hand, Tosfos discusses here and in some other places in Shas that maybe not necessarily. Maybe that last one, maybe the one who's a mumer la'arelos, no question about it, he's an oral. The one who is not, on the other hand, Tosfos says the one who is not getting it because he can't, because his brother has died, Machmas Mila, maybe Tosfos, Rabbeinu Tam says in some places, and here and in other places in Shas, maybe he's not considered an oral for these purposes, because he would like to have a bris mila. It's only that the halacha and medical science are telling him not to. So therefore, he's an onus. So an onus wouldn't necessarily be excluded under the category of oral. What would be excluded would be the second case, where he could get a bris mila, but he's afraid of the pain, and therefore he doesn't want to. So therefore we say, look, until you do, then you're considered an oral, and among other things, you can't come to the Bais Mikdash, and you can't send korbanos to the Bais Mikdash. Okay, so we have machlokes, what's counted under the definition of an oral. Anyway, we're saying ha'oro ba'atomit p'turim min re'iyah, they are potter from re'iyah. Obviously, they can't come into the Azara, but we're going to ask soon how we know that the oral can't. The tomei obviously can't come into the Azara, but the point is they don't even need to send their korbanos with a shliach. Tosfos actually points out that we learned in Moed Katan, we had a discussion over there about that a Tomei is able to send korbanos to the Bais Mikdash. So Tosfos explains that we're talking about over there a Metzora, let's say, who became, he was healed from his Tzoras, so now he goes through his whole procedure over there, and then he needs to bring his korbanos. But let's say by the time it's time for him to bring his korbanos, he became a Metzora again, so then we're going to allow him to send his korbanos. But not in the Dorim and Adavos, but in the Dorim and Adavos, actually Tosfos says that no. So Fakir, sorry, what it means is that in a case like that, he can't bring the korban that he's chayev for his first tzaras, because now he's a second time mitzvah, so therefore he doesn't send his korbanos. But other kinds of korbanos, he should be able to send nedarim and adavos, yeah. But here we're not talking nedarim and adavos, here we're talking about a korban that he's required to bring, so therefore we would say that a tomei does not have to send it to the mishmash. If he wanted to send it as an adavah, then according to Tosfos, he would be allowed to. A different other Rishonim talk about different possibilities. Maybe we're talking about different kinds of tmeim. Maybe some kinds of tmeim can, such as a tomei mess, can send their korbanos, and other kinds not. Anyway, so the question is b'shlema tomei. I understand why the tomei does not have to send his korbanos because he can't come into the azora. The pasuk says uvasa shama v'havesim shama. The pasuk says you should come there to the Beis Hamikdash and you should bring there your korbanos, implying kol sheyeshne b'bia yeshne b'hava. So anyone who can come into the Beis Hamikdash is able to bring and send korbanos and is required to send korbanos that he's obligated in. If he can't come in, he's not required to send. So that takes out the tamei. Ela oral manalon. Why should the oral? We're not talking about a koyan who can't do the avodah. We're talking about Israel. Why should an oral not be able to go into the azara and not be able to bring his korbanos? The answer is homani rabaktivahi. The answer is that this Braisa that was saying that the oral is potter from Aliyah the Regal and from bringing the korbanos would be according to Rabbi Akiva, demarbi la oral katame. Rabbi Akiva learns from a ribui in the pasuk that an oral is just like a tame. The Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa, Rabbi Akiva Omer, when the pasuk says ish, the pasuk says regarding koyanim eating truma, and it starts and it introduces it by saying the word ish. And then it talks about, among other things, it talks about a kohen whose tomei is not allowed to eat truma. So Rabbi Akiva says the words ish, l'rabba, says an oral, it comes to include an oral that he is like a tomei, and therefore if he's a kohen, he can't eat truma. So therefore, so Rabbi Akiva is going to say that by the same token, since a tomei cannot come into the azara, and therefore is potter from sending his olas to ear and other yomtev korbanos, Therefore, an oral is in the same category as well. Tosfos points out, now on Aleph, we talk about the Trumtum and the Adragonus. Now, on the face of it, a Trumtum, we said that his gid is covered up, even if we said his beitzim are sticking out, but his gid is covered up, that's the definition of a Trumtum. So obviously, he doesn't have a bris mila either. So according to Rabbi Akiva, we should exclude him on the grounds of being an oral. So Tosfos says, okay, you're right, that would have been according to the Chachamim, not according to Rabbi Akiva. And then Tosfos gets into this discussion that I was mentioning before about the different kinds of oral. So now, actually, we could say that now we could even say, therefore, that the tumtum of before, he doesn't have a bris mila because it's an oinus, because we're not able to open that up and give him a bris mila because it's covered up. So therefore, as long as that persists that way, then therefore he would be, again, Tosfos learns that maybe a person who's oral because his brother has died of mila, and therefore he's not able, la halacha, to have a bris mila, maybe he'd be considered an oinus. Well, a trumtum could be in the same category. So according to Rabbi Akiva, therefore, an oral is not bringing oilas to ear, is not bringing his korbanos, and is not appearing in the bismikdash. Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa, Tomei Potter min Re'iyah, a person whose Tomei is Potter from Re'iyah, Dichtiv, as we just said, Uvasa Shama V'Avesim Shama, you should come over there to the Beis Mikdash, and you should bring your Korbanos, which means, as we said, Kol She'yeshne B'Bia Yeshne B'Havah, anybody who's able to come into the Azara has to bring his Korbanos, V'Kol She'eni B'Bia Eini B'Havah, anybody who can't come into the Beis Mikdash, namely because he's Tomei, does not have to bring his Korbanos, Rabbi Yechanan ben Dehavai Omer, and Rabbi Yechon ben Dahavai says, which we learned back on Beis Amon Aleph, Mishum Rabbi Yehuda, Suma Ba'achas Me'ena, Potter Min Re'iyah, a person who is blind in one eye, is Potter from Re'iyah, Shenema Yireh Yeroah, as we said over there, the Drosha, that it says in the Pasuk Yeroah, and we could read it Yireh, and we had Rashi and Tosfos arguing what the order of the words is. Is it Yireh Yeroah or Yeroah Yireh? Anyway, we said, Kederach Shebal Lirois Kach Bal Lirois, just as he comes to see the Shechina, so he comes to be seen. Or we said, again, there were different ways of learning that exactly. It can mean the same way as he comes for Hashem to see him, the same way he comes to see, the same way he comes for him to see Hashem, whatever. Ma bol liris b'shtei enav. So just like when he comes to see, he's seen by Hashem with both eyes, The same way to be seen, he has to be seen with both eyes, and therefore if he's missing one eye, then he's potter. As we talked about in some detail on Beis Marava. So now the Gemara is going to bring some Agadta on this, and then the Gemara is going to digress into a long piece of Agadta that's going to take us all the way to, all the way until the bottom of Hey Omid Beis. So the Gemara starts off, Rav Huna ki moti lahai kro yira yeroe bochi. When Rav Huna would learn this pasuk of Yira, which we're saying of Yeroa, which we're saying can be darshan Yira, about appearing, about showing yourself in the Azara and being shown the Shechina, Bochi, he would cry. Omar, he would say, look at this, Eved Sherabim Mitzapel Leroy. So how could it be that an Eved who his master loved him so much that he really was looking forward to see him, that Hashem is saying, Yeroa, I want you to be seen in the Azara, and Yira, that you should be able to see the Shechina, Yisrachet Menu. How could it be that such an Eved, how did it happen that such an Eved became so distanced that now his master doesn't like him and wants him to stay away? As we have the pasuk that we quoted at the top of the Amud, where the Navi criticizes the Jewish people, and he says, when you come to appear in my presence, who asked you to trample my courtyards? So in other words, Hashem is saying, now that you're doing Averis, I don't want to see you in my business. So that brought Rav Huna to tears, thinking how we had such a close relationship with Hashem, and Hashem is looking forward to seeing us in the Besmikdash 3 times a year, and now we spoiled it with our Avedas, and now Hashem is saying, I don't want to see you anymore. Marsha points out, the word miyedchem actually hints at, we learned in Sukkah and in Moed Katan. We talk about Kida means bowing on the ground in such a way where you're bowing and you're supporting your body on your thumbs, and then you lift yourself back up. So in other words, that's the kind of bowing that involves hands and feet, which is why the Pasuk uses the word over here, miyedchem. In other words, Hashem is saying, I don't want you, I don't need you to appear in the Azara if you're going to be full of Averis, and I don't need you to be doing Kida, where there you're using both your hands and feet to go on the floor in my Azara if you're not going to be listening to me anyway. So now we're saying Rav Huna would cry when he reached that Pasuk, realizing how far we've fallen. Similarly, Rav Huna ki moti la'ai krabachi, another pasuk Rav Huna would also cry about when he was learning. A pasuk says, "V'zavachta shlomim ve'achalta sham." Hashem says that the original context is by how grisim and how evil, by the brachos of flawless over there, but it applies in general. That Hashem says you should offer shlomim and you should eat them over there. So Rav Huna would say, "Eved shirabim etzapa lechal ashulchanai." Again, you have an eved who's so dear to his master that his master is looking forward to having him eat by his table, rather than usually most slaves you would just have. You'll give them their food wherever they are. But here you have one who his master loves so much that he wants him dafka to eat by his table. And again, he's srachet menu. How did it become that we're so distanced from him? And Hashem says, I don't want you. Dichtiv, and you have a different pasuk. We're also in the same chapter in Yeshaya, Lomali Roiv Zivchechem Yoimer Hashem. Hashem says, what do I need all your kavanas for? So again, look how far we've fallen, that our Averis ruined that close relationship that we had with Hashem. So now the Gemara continues with other Amoraim who cried over Psukim that really moved them in like that. Rabbi Lazar, if you have a Moti Moti Lahai Krabachi, Rabbi Lazar would cry when he reached the following pasuk. You have when Yosef tells his brothers who he is in Parashas Vayigash. So he tells them, "Ani Yosef Ha'oda V'Chai," and the pasuk continues, "V'lo Yochel Echav Lanei So." His brothers couldn't answer him, ki nivhalu mipono, because they were frightened, they were startled in his presence. So Rabbi Lazar would cry over that. He would say, when a human being gave them toichacha, and he hadn't yet told them any toichacha. He all he told them was, ani Yosef ha'oda v'chai, but there's an implicit toichacha in it. The Rashi actually says toichacha doesn't necessarily mean musar, as in telling them explicitly what they did wrong. It just means shemechiach pishe b'fanav. He demonstrates to them what they had done wrong. Just saying the words ani Yosef is enough itself already for them to all of a sudden realize, with such a shattering realization, how wrong they had been all those years. And they were so stunned by that that they couldn't speak. So he says, Toichecha shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, alachas kama v'kama, how much more so when Hashem is going to put in front of a person what he did and what he should have done, how much more so that a person is going to be too frightened and too startled to be able to say anything. Because now it's all going to come home to him what he really did. So Tosfos points out, now there are individual things that a person might have a limud zchus on himself for. But we're talking overall. In other words, there's going to be Hashem is going to show a person what you could have been and what you could have done, and it's going to stun the person into silence that he couldn't that he's not going to have an overall answer for all of it. There is, by the way, a verse they say that there is an implicit teichecha in when he says ha'od abichai. He's saying, is my father really alive? Then how is it that you weren't concerned all this time? You've been so concerned about Binyamin. What's going to happen? He finds out that Binyamin doesn't come home. He's going to die of grief. Why weren't you concerned? The same way all those years ago when you sold me. So there is sort of an implicit teichecha in there. There is in that connection a verse from the Chofetz Chaim that says that takes a different tack on it. All this time, the brothers have been wondering what's going on. Why are we being treated this way? Why is this viceroy putting our money in our sacks and framing Binyamin and so on and so forth? And they don't understand anything. And then he says the two words, Ani Yosef, and all of a sudden, all the questions fall away and they all understand how everything falls into place. So the Chofetz Chaim says, in a similar vein, when the Geula Amitis Vashlema comes and Hashem appears and says, Ani Hashem, the same way, all the questions that we had, everything that we were wondering, why did everything have to be the way it was in Golos, all of a sudden, all those questions will fall away and we'll understand once and for all why Hashem did all the things that he did and why we went through all the things that we did. Anyway, so we're saying Rebbe Lazar, when he had that realization, would cry over that, realizing how is a person going to defend himself against when Hashem shows him what he could have been and what he could have done, he's not going to be able to. Another one, Rebbe Lazar would cry when he reached the following pasuk. You have the story where Shaul goes to, where Shaul is about to fight against the Plishtim. He's not getting any answers the usual ways with the Urim Tumim or Nevi'im and so forth. So he goes to an Ashes Balas Oiv, a woman who practices Oiv magic, and asks her to bring up the spirit of Shmuel. And so the pasuk says, "Vayoma Shmuel or Shaul, Lama Hu Gaztani Lahalas Oisi." Shmuel, it's Shmuel's spirit, his neshama, says to Shaul, "Why did you make me tremble and bring me up?" So what do you mean tremble? So Rabbi Lazar says, "Ma Shmuel Atzadikoy Mestiyadim Adin." Madach Shmuel, the great tzaddik, was afraid of Hashem's judgment. He thought when he's being called from Gan Eden, he thought he's being called to be judged by Hashem, and he was afraid, and he uses on the word hirgaztani, that you made me tremble. So onu alachas kama v'kama, how much more so we should be afraid of Hashem's judgment. So the Gemara says, Shmuel ma'i, where do we see that Shmuel was fearful? So dichtiv, that you have a couple of psukim earlier. It says, "Vatoma ha'isha el shol." The woman said to Shol, "Elikim ra'isi olim. I have seen elikim that they are coming up." Now, elikim often we know doesn't always mean Hashem. Elikim often means powerful ones. In this case, it means tzaddikim. But she says the word olim. So olim tre mashma. So the word olim implies two. So but Shmuel, but Shol, it only asked her to bring up Shmuel. So who is the other one? So Chad Shmuel, so one of them is Shmuel. The Idach, now what's the other one doing over there? Is the Ozel Shmuel Va'asya LaMoshe Bahadeh. Shmuel went and brought Moshe to come along with him. Again, Shmuel, he hears his name being called. He thinks he's being called in front of the Beis Din Shamayla, that maybe they found some Aveira or something that he had done. So he brought Moshe as a character witness. Amalei, he says to Moshe, "Duma chas v'shalom the dinim is beina. Maybe chas v'shalom I'm being called in front of the Beis Din Shamayla to be judged for some avera that I didn't know about. Kum bahadoi, or so that I'm being accused of some avera. Kum bahadoi." So he asked Moshe, "Come with me, deleka, and tell them deleka milsa dechsavta ba'araisa delekiyamde, and tell them that there's not a single thing that you Moshe Rabbeinu wrote in the Torah that I did not fulfill." So that's why when the Ashes Balas Oiv saw them, she saw that there were two of them, because it wasn't just Shmuel, it was also Moshe Rabbeinu. Tosfos points out that if not that Moshe could actually say that Shmuel had kept all the mitzvahs, after all, how would he know? Shmuel lived a few hundred years after him. It means Shmuel is telling him, throughout my life, I darshan psukim and darshan and darshan dinim and followed and followed those drushes in knowing what to practically do. You come and give edus that all of drush, that all those drushes of mine were correct, and therefore that all the maisim that I did based on them were really correct. Masha says you don't really need that. There's actually the Gemara discusses in Brachas and says that the Mesim do know what's going on in the world. So therefore we can say that Moshe Rabbeinu knows what's going on throughout Shmuel's life, and he would actually know what Shmuel did and didn't do, and he could actually be a character witness on him. So the point is, Marashah says, in other words, the fact that it says he was Gaztani implies that he was fearful, but what was he fearful of? This other Kimra Isi, or the Menorah, clarifies that he was afraid he's being brought in front of the Beis Din Shamayla, and therefore he needed Moshe as a character witness. So Rabbi Lazar would cry about that, and he's saying, if even Shmuel was afraid of Hashem's judgment, and he needed Moshe Rabbeinu to vouch for him, how much more so we should be afraid? Other examples of Chachamim who would cry when they reached a certain pasuk and thought of the implications of it. Rab Ami kimati lahai krob bachi. When Rab Ami would reach the following pasuk, he would cry. The pasuk says, Yitin ba'ofer piu in Eicha. It says, let him place his mouth in the dust. In other words, like a yid in Golos has to completely humble himself in front of whatever goyim are ruling over him, and even bow down, and his mouth touches the dirt. Ulai yesh tikva. Perhaps there is hope. So he would cry, oh my, kulai hai, look at that. A yid has to be so degraded, but ulai, and it's only maybe Hashem will have rachmanus and then save him from the situation. Similarly, Rab Ami kimati lahai kra, bachi, also the same Rab Ami, would also cry when he reached another pasuk that expresses the same idea. Bakshu tzedek bakshu anava. The Navi says to the Jewish people, there's a churban and a golos coming unless you do tshuva. He says, seek out tzedek, seek out righteousness, seek out another humility. Ulai tisosru b'yom af Hashem. Perhaps you will be protected on the day of Hashem's anger. So also, he would cry, and he would say, kula hai, but ulai. So you're telling me a person has to look for tzedek and another high levels in avodah, and still it's only maybe he'll be saved. And Rab Asi kimati lahai krabachi. And similarly, Rab Asi would cry when he reached a similar pasuk with a similar implication. A different Navi, Omos, says, Sin urav ehavu tov. He tells the people, hate evil and love goodness, batsigu basham mishpat, and establish justice in the gate, which is usually where the batei dinim sat. Ulai yechanan Hashem elokei tzvakos. Maybe Hashem elokei tzvakos will have rachmanus. And again, he would say, kula hai, but ulai, all that, we're telling me you have to do mishpat, you have to have sinu rav evu toiv, and atzigu v'sha'a mishpat, which includes all the different great levels of avoida, and even that is only ulai, maybe you'll be saved. So he would cry over the implication of that. We actually have one of the slichas that we say during the days before Rosh Hashanah expresses the same theme as well. You have one of the slichas over there begins Malachi Rachmim Mishorse Elyon, and we say over and over in them Ulai Yochis Am Oni Ve'Elyon Ulai Yirachem She'eris Yosef and so forth, expressing the same idea that no matter how much a person does, Hashem has his chashbonus and Hashem has his ways of running the world, and not necessarily are we guaranteed that we're going to come out with a favorable judgment. So Rav Asi over here was saying would cry over the implications of that, realizing that no matter what, a person does everything that they're supposed to, and still we don't understand how Hashem runs the world, and sometimes you have Rosh of a Tovla and Sadik Radaloi and various other things like that, which actually will continue in the Gemara tomorrow. So we're going to continue with another example of one of the Chachamim crying over such a thing, and we're actually going to talk more about that idea of how we see sometimes it seems that there are people who get what they don't on the face of it they don't seem to deserve. So we'll talk about that more tomorrow, Beis Hashem.